In association with Newsarama, welcome again to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. This is John Suntress. Today, we take a look at Archer, the new animated series from FX featuring a secret agent, his domineering mother, and his various co-workers. The show is created by Adam Reed, the co-creator of C-Lab 2021 and Frisky Dingo, and today we speak with Neil Holman, the art director of Archer. Starting as an intern, Holman has worked on all three of Adam Reed and Matt Thompson's shows, C-Lab 2021, Frisky Dingo, and now currently Archer. And this conversation gives us an opportunity to talk about the evolution of Archer as a series, its ties to the former shows, plus Neil gives us a rundown of what to expect from the next seven episodes. Before we get started, a couple Word Balloon notes. Make sure you go to wordballoon.com, our website, because I've been putting up a lot of video lately, including a scene from Ultimate Spider-Man 6, the book that came out just a couple weeks ago. There was a new Principal Suntress scene with Aunt May and also an action scene, but I took that scene with Aunt May and have created my first Word Balloon no-motion comic. A good friend of mine, Megan Reed, at my radio station provided the voice of Aunt May, and I played Principal Suntress. We've reenacted the scene with sound effects and music. I think you'll like it. It's waiting for you at wordballoon.com. And as I say, it's the first of my no-motion comics. There's going to be more of those in the months ahead. Keep looking for them. And also, more videos about Chicago's comic scene. I've had the chance to take the phone camera out and shoot a couple live events that were going on in the last couple of weeks, and I will be bringing you more of those scenes online. It's all waiting for you on the video pages of wordballoon.com. One quick show note about today's episode. I've recently bought a netbook and am starting to experiment and record on it. Because of that, there was a little bit of surface noise during my conversation with Neil. It's not terrible. It's just you're going to notice a sound change from the first half of the show to the second half. Again, everything is clear. You can hear everything fantastic. Just as I work out the bugs of using this new system, be patient with me as we transition to newer and faster equipment and more mobile equipment here at Word Balloon. But for now, let's begin our conversation with Neil, who explains his role on the Archer series from FX.
Now, you're the art director for Archer.
I am. I'm the guy that gets yelled at a lot. So if you see, basically what happens is a script gets written, and then it comes to me, and I talk with Adam Reed, the creator and executive producer and writer, about what all he wants the show to look like. We bounce around from a lot of different locations. Like right now, I'm doing a Paris car chase. There's a lot of concept design work to be done, and a lot of which part of Paris is this in, Adam? Because let me tell you, that guy has a very specific image of Paris in his head that he wants done. So he and I talk a lot to try and get the show to look the way he wants it to look. And then I also, you know, I want it to look a certain way too. So I have my own ideas and my own twists on things, and once I get some concepts going, while that's going, we have two storyboard artists, David Caicedo and Deke Whiteman, and I'll work with them on doing storyboards and sort of breaking the scene down. And then my job is basically spinning plates.
Okay.
So, there's a lot going on at once. So while David and Deke are doing storyboards, my other coworker Nick Gibbons is breaking those boards into assignments to give to our stable of artists, and I'm overseeing a lot of that. I think I'm doing a poor job of explaining what my job is, John.
No, I'm assuming that you're kind of the guy who puts it all together.
Yeah, it's a lot of spinning plates. It's a lot of like getting the departments to work at the same pace and work at the same time, and then also when the stuff is finished, coming back in and doing quality control on it and checking like, oh, these pants are too baggy, or color corrections, and making sure the scene works. And then once you get it all composited, does it actually work as a scene? Which is kind of a hard part. If you've sort of skimped on the storyboards and just sort of closed your eyes and hoped that it's going to work, then once you get it composited, before it goes to the guys that animate it in After Effects, you know, sometimes some problems just happen that you didn't see coming. So It's a lot of like just sort of bouncing from department to department and fixing this and fixing that.
Well, I love the look. I like the look of the show. I think it's...
Thanks, man.
Oh, absolutely. No, I mean, it was very distinct and very comic booky in a good way. And yeah, I mean, it really does feel like the genre that you're obviously making fun of. And the Mole episode was the first one that I saw, and it had that great Casino Royale opening. It sucked me in right away. Is there a comic book style? Is there an artist style that you guys were looking at? I mean, because I was going to say, yeah, I mean, I don't really see Steranko in there. I don't really see Alex Toth in there. You know what I mean?
There wasn't, like, one comic artist that we were looking at and going for, you know? Comics, I sort of taught myself to draw from comic books as a kid, so, and I'm still a big comic nerd now, so...
Cool.
I'm a huge fan of going for that more comic booky style, and the look of Archer is really, we had done Frisky Dingo previously, and Frisky Dingo was sort of heavily photo-based, so we would take a bunch of pictures of ourselves or our friends, and then we would draw over top those pictures to try and keep the sort of realism, and we liked that. We liked it mostly because we knew how to do it and do it very quickly. And that's sort of, when we were creating the pilot, that was an issue. We had to make that pilot in 3 months.
The Archer pilot or the Frisky pilot?
The Archer pilot.
Okay.
So, and we were coming straight off Frisky, so it was sort of, do we spend how many ever weeks developing an entirely new style that's not photo-based, or do we try and just do, like, the next progression? And that's really where the Archer came from. I knew I wanted thicker lines. I knew I wanted less shadow work. So it's just really every character has two tones, a base color and a shadow color.
Okay.
And that's it. And, so the thicker line thing just sort of came as just messing around with design ideas and design aesthetics. I thought it would stand out as opposed to, like, Family Guy, and a lot of the animation you see has these really razor-thin lines, if they have lines. So I thought it would pop and it would be great. And then once we got the background painting style down, everything really just fit together. And it was a long process and sort of a process like a trial by error more than anything. But once we got it, we were all super thrilled with the way it was looking, and to this day, there's nothing I'd really change about the design aesthetic from it.
One thing I'm very impressed with it was, and reading this online, is you guys are able to turn out an episode as quickly as you are. Three weeks for a half-hour show?
Yeah. Man.
That's nuts.
It's flying. It's flying by.
We're talking on a Sunday and you're working, so that might explain why you're able to do it in 3 weeks.
There's a room full of guys in the other room just cranking it away. Well, they offered us six episodes, and we were going to premiere behind It's Always Sunny. That was a huge carrot. That's a so much larger stage to play on than what we've done before, and but the schedule was this insane schedule, and but we all signed up, so like it's too big of an opportunity to turn down. So we signed up for this like 5 months of incredibly hard work, and then during that 5 months, they bought four more episodes, which is great. You know, hey, it's a great sign. It means they like us.
But it puts you in the gulag. Yeah, it puts you in the gulag a few more months, obviously.
Yeah, exactly. And we wouldn't be able to make the premiere date behind It's Always Sunny.
Okay.
So it's great. We have 10 episodes total. Couldn't be happier. But, man, this schedule is it's in the grind. But we're grinding out, like, the ninth episode right now, and I'm just now starting the 10th episode. So we will turn it in 2 days before it airs.
That's terrific. That's great, man. Well, and
not a lot of room for error there.
I guess not. And there's three episodes have aired. The fourth episode airs Thursday night at 9 o'clock Central. I'm sorry, I'm stuck in Central. So that's 10 o'clock Eastern and Pacific, kids. But here in the Heartland, it's 9 o'clock. But that's all right. The good cast. Always good to hear Chris Parnell. And I think I have a feeling, does Parnell do more than one voice on the show?
No. Just Chris Parnell.
He's just Cyril. Okay.
Days.
Very cool. And
great cast.
Aisha Tyler, man, every time I see her do stand-up and hear her on a comedy podcast, I have more respect for her because, yeah, she's hot.
Charming.
Yes, and yeah, and I mean, that came through in Friends, and if you see her live doing stand-up and stuff, she's this beautiful woman, balls of fury. She's funny in that as well. Gorgeous woman, and...
Yeah, super pretty, and so amazingly charming and nice. Like, it's not an act. Like, she's genuinely nice and cool, just so down-to-earth, and... I'm talking like we're best friends. She she came and visited the studio briefly, and so like she was just awesome and just like genuinely interested in how the show is made, and walked around and said hi to everybody and asked questions, and you know, she's actively promoting the show, and it's awesome. Like as far as our cast goes, I don't think we could have done any better. Like everyone from Judy Greer does fantastic work as Cheryl, and then Jessica Walter, like,
yeah,
Jessica Walter's amazing. So, and then John Benjamin, man, that guy,
very funny.
He adds a whole different level to a very funny script. Like, he takes a really funny script and then adds his own funniness to it, and it's awesome. It's sort of lightning in a bottle for the moment.
Now, Judy, I'm trying to place Judy Greer, because, of course, Jessica Walters, the mom on Arrested Development, and, of
right.
course...
Judy Greer was the secretary, the say goodbye to these, you know? Say goodbye to these!
I remember... No, I know her on the show, but I'm saying, what else has she done beyond Archer?
Oh, God, she's done... I was just talking about this film the other day. I'm blanking on it, but
that's okay. By the way, Christopher Walken, for those of you keeping score at home, is who we were trying to think of. And everyone at home listening is like, Christopher Walken, asshole. What's wrong with you?
Dude, she's been a bunch of stuff, man. She's around, and like there's one specific movie I was just talking about with somebody, but she's great. I could not be happier with the cast that we have.
Very cool. Well, and also. You know, I don't think people understand sometimes, because you guys are based in Atlanta, and you've got a lot of, I'm assuming, L.A. Talent as far as the voice work goes. I mean, are they able to get together, or are they doing their parts separately? How does the audio start?
They do it all separately. Adam will patch in over the phone lines into their headphones and direct them and talk with them just like you and I are talking. And, everyone's scattered all across the country, and because these are working actors, they're rarely are they ever in the same town. It's just sort of the way it has to be.
It seems like Adam's really been at Adult Swim from the start, and just this whole new movement of adult cartoons beyond what we've seen on the networks. The last 10 years have been pretty exciting in terms of what has gone on cable to allow more adult animation and everything, and it's cool that you guys have been able to be a part of that.
Yeah, Adam and Matt Thompson, our other executive producer, sort of got in on the ground floor with C-Lab 2021, which was their first series. And, they sort of pitched it as a whim. They had worked for Cartoon Network for a while in the 90s, just doing, interstitials, this sort of hand puppet show. That would air between shows, sort of coming up next. So they had a lot of contacts in the network, and they had both left to go to New York. And while they were in New York, they were doing like a lot of I'm trying to remember the story, but they were doing a lot of like background television work. Like so, an episode of Stargate would air. I think this was back when it was on Showtime, and in the credits they would interview Richard Dean Anderson or somebody like that. Matt and Adam were the guys doing those interviews.
Oh wow. Okay.
A lot of like behind the scenes stuff. Matt went on location with like this late. Their contact at Showtime that was throwing him all this work, and they were racing snowmobiles around, and Matt accidentally rolled a snowmobile and broke the lady's legs. So work for them kind of dried up pretty quickly after that.
Gee, I wonder.
They had earlier when they had worked for Cartoon Network, they'd made a C-Lab pilot that was more like a What's Up Tiger Lily sort of deal, just their voices over the pre-existing animation, and Cartoon Network sort of smartly passed on it. And because if you look at it now, it's not what C-Lab became. But flash forward to when Matt breaks his lady's legs, they sort of learned a lot about making television and how to manipulate stuff. So they made a new pilot with cutting up the animation and making it sort of what they wanted to do, and just pitched it back to Cartoon Network, and it was right when Cartoon Network was looking to start Adult Swim. So
they sort of struck when the iron was hot, so to speak.
Right around the second season, I think, The Legend of Baggy Pants is when I started. Yeah, it was great. I got the internship through a friend of mine who had also interned with him, who got it. Ed Mundy got the internship by emailing a Space Ghost coast-to-coast listserv asking about, hey, is there an internship? And Adam Reed was on that listserv, and he's like, yeah, we need an intern. Come work for us. So the rest is sort of history. Ed still works for us as well.
How many seasons did C-Lab go? Five?
C-Lab went to four seasons? I think it was four.
Who was the voice actor that played Murphy and passed away?
Oh, that was Harry Goss.
Man, that guy was good.
Man, that guy was amazing. Just amazing. And, man, and the day he passed away was one of the worst days. Matt had called the hospital just to check in on him and see how he's doing. And they told him, he's not doing well. He passed away.
Wow.
And, that was a bad day.
I'm sure. And, no, well.
His son actually played the new captain that came on after.
Oh, wow. That's cool. Well, and you gave Eric Estrada new life on that show. I mean,
he tried.
Come on, man. Oh, he was hilarious. Marco, fantastic.
That was a fun show to work on, man. It was nothing was off limits. We could be as weird as we wanted to be. It was great. You know, there's an episode where the lights go out and it's just one shot for 11 minutes. And it was just like, it's awesome, man. It's this experimental thing that, like, we could just play around with ideas and concepts. At one point, we always pitched this idea, but we never did it. Do you work on a Mac at all?
No, I work on a PC, but I work on a Mac at work, so go ahead.
Yeah, so, you know, like the spinning beach ball that you get when your computer freezes or program freezes? We're just going to have the screen pause and have that thing come up for, like, a minute. And we never did it. I don't know why. I was just like, I love the idea. But, like, that was that type of show. Like, we could just take whatever chances we wanted. And it was great. And Cartoon Network was always, free reign. Do what you want. We would get notes, but they would be sparing.
What was the next show that you guys did?
We rolled right from C-Lab into Frisky Dingo.
Okay.
To the point of, like, Matt and Adam took us out. Like, these shows... Frisky Dingo and C-Lab, by the way, were made by, at that time it was 70-30 Productions, and that was eight people making a show.
Wow.
So it was a very small group, a tight-knit group of guys. And so, like, we all went to lunch, and Matt told us that C-Lab was canceled, and we all laughed. We're like, oh, that's hilarious. No, it's not. And then there's, like, a minute, we're like, yeah, it's actually really canceled. And then it was like, what? But they already had a plan, and they while we were finishing the last episodes of C-Lab, we were already starting production on Frisky Dingo and doing pre-production work of concepts and ideas. So, and the network, you know, we had a great relationship with them, so it was almost not a built-in deal, but very close to.
Did you guys also work on Freak Squad?
Freak Show?
No. A Freak Show, okay.
No. That was a studio called Radical Axis.
Okay.
That is here in Atlanta. Actually, like, so Freak Show happened, and they had to hide. Freak Show was also another cartoon where they had this incredibly insane schedule, like, super fast turnaround. So Radical ended up hiring, like, something to the effect of, like, 80 people.
Jesus.
A lot.
Yeah.
Sort of ballooned from maybe 10, 15 to 80. And bought all these new computers and hardware, and then, as you know, Freak Show didn't get a second season. So they have this giant space and all these computers, and when Archer got the green light, we needed a space, and we knew we needed a lot more guys, and we knew we needed computers and everything else. So we're now renting out that studio space in Radical Axis, and they're helping us make this show.
Wow, okay.
Yeah.
That's cool.
It's cool. It's great. And, you know, like, they have a built-in infrastructure for this sort of thing. So they have these giant servers, and if something goes wrong, like, it's sort of the blending of two studios. Like, we know how to do things a certain way, and they know how to do things a certain way, and we're all sort of learning from each other.
It's interesting how Atlanta has become you know, this animation little corner of America and stuff. And obviously, a lot of the seed money comes from Cartoon Network, which was a Turner company anyway. So,
giant part of it.
Yeah, and I'm sure that makes sense. I mean, are you guys near CNN Plaza, or is that far enough away, or whatever?
It's close by, but we're not super close to it.
Okay.
That's sort of right in the downtown, the business district. So we're more on the west side of Atlanta.
Okay.
But yeah, minutes away if we so needed to be.
What do you think of some of these other platforms that are starting to develop? Because I even remember, in the case of Freak Show, I remember it being introduced in New York as being, I don't know if it was for smartphones or if it was just for online. But, you know, as opposed to it just being made really initially for television, or maybe they were testing it first online before they were putting it on TV. But, you know, do you guys have the time, or is it really pretty much just all Archer all the time while Archer's going on? Are you guys developing other, you know, ideas and, you know?
For like, application specific, like for phones and stuff?
Well, yeah, and also, you know, too, just like FX as opposed to, you know, Adult Swim came to you guys for Archer or whatever. Or, I don't even know, actually, explain that. Who was Archer pitched to FX, or did FX come to you guys and say, we've liked what you've done, come up with something for us?
So Frisky Dingo had done fairly well critically. It didn't do great ratings, but critically it sort of made some heads turn. And from that, Adam got some agents. And Adam had gone on sabbatical for a year while we were working on the spinoff of Frisky Dingo called The Exticles.
Okay.
And during that year, he was walking around Spain. He started walking the entire Appalachian Trail, and then he decided he hated that. So, like, you know what, Spain sounds way more fun than walking around in the woods.
That's true.
So while he was there, he sort of got this idea for Archer, sort of jerk spy. And when he got back, his agent set up meetings with networks sort of across the board, everybody from Fox to FX to Comedy Central and so on and so forth, like down the line. So he went to a lot of meetings, and FX ended up being the winning meeting that I think it was sort of the meeting that he felt the best about, and also just it just sort of worked. Like when he was in the meeting with them, it kind of clicked. So that's how we ended up there. They didn't come and pursue us or anything.
Okay. And are they, you know, do they have show notes? I mean, does it work like a regular TV series and everything in terms of?
Adam will write a script, send them a draft. They'll give some notes on it, and he'll write another draft. And they give some basic animation notes on, like, oh, you should maybe cut to a close-up here, or if you could push this a little bit further to heighten the mood. But the notes are always really good and really informed, you know? Like, they don't come out of left field, and they always seem to make a lot of sense. So it's been great. They're really nice. Like, none of us really knew what it was going to be like. You know, when you're working with new people, you don't know if this is going to be, oh wow, these people are crazy, or you hope for the best, and this outcome has been fantastic for us.
What can you tell us about what's coming up? Like I said, we've got we've still got 7 shows to see that haven't been shown yet.
Yeah, I'm super excited for what's coming. This next episode is a little bit different in that it's a dinner party. There's not quite as much action and chasing and gunfights. And then down the line, my favorite episode so far has been episode 7, which is Skytanic. It's like takes place on board the Hindenburg, but a new version of the Hindenburg called Excelsior, with hydrogen. It's by far, I think it's my favorite episode so far. It's just super fun, and then also as far as a design challenge, the entire episode takes place aboard the ship. So I'm designing everything from an engine pod to a casino to these little tiny closet bedrooms and to a master suite. It was just really fun. And then we bounce all over the place. We go to Saint-Tropez, and then we go to San Marino, which is a country that I had no idea existed.
No, I'm kind of geography challenged too, so that's all right. Where is San Marino?
It's right in the middle of Italy.
Okay.
It has some sort of title, like the smallest country, and there's only like 30,000 people live there. And I forget the full name of it, but it's something like the Beautiful Republic of San Marino or something. That's the official name.
Is it an island?
Republic. No, it's a sort of a mountainous fort.
Okay.
It's bizarre. Look it up, man. It's a bizarre little place.
Is any guest stars coming up in the next few episodes?
Yeah, Ron Perlman is in 105.
Cool.
The name of that one. He's fantastic. And Jeffrey Tambor actually is in this episode that airs this week.
Okay.
And he also shows up later in the season finale as well. So Jeffrey Tambor, he's amazing.
Yeah, and like Parnell, I mean, I think has just one of those great voices that I think translate well to animation, too.
Really, really distinctive voice, and just sort of his delivery is pitch perfect.
I've been a fan of his since the Ropers, but more recently, I Hank Kingsley, my God.
Hank Kingsley, man. That guy, that whole show was amazing. So the reruns of it never really get old.
No, the only time I was mad was when Bravo was running Larry Sanders, and they just
kind of neutered it.
Yeah, exactly, man. I mean, come on, you need Artie to say fuck. You need every
like
fuck in that
Sopranos
script.
On A&E. It's just like, what? This is, why bother?
I haven't watched Entourage on Spike yet. I haven't seen how, if it can survive without the fucks and the nudity and everything, but
I can't see it. But maybe do they like try and replace it with a fudge or something? I thought
no,
my favorite went out.
They go silent. You know, I mean, so you see them saying the word, but they just go silent.
Have you seen The Big Lebowski, but with the replaced audio?
No, I can only imagine.
Yeah, it's. Oh, man, there's some line about you never fudge with a man in the Alps or something like that. It's amazing. It's just like, wow, really?
The Blues
Why
Brothers.
Why did you just go silent? Why did you go to that much trouble to deliver that? Really?
The Blues Brothers is like that, too. I mean, I you know, there's a movie that I've, you know, literally watched for 30 years and everything. And, yeah, when I saw it on network TV, it was like, oh, what are you doing? Don't even bother.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's right. Funny. So what? Tell me about the comic books when you have time. What comic books do you read?
Oh yeah, I sort of bounce around from a lot of different books. Everything from like The Walking Dead,
cool,
to Fear Agent, and Atomic Robo, and
cool.
DMZ for a while, but I think I've sort of fell behind on that. And Ex Machina, anything Brian K. Vaughan does is amazing, pretty great.
I'm with you.
And then Powers, of course, I've picked up for a long, long time.
What do you think of the new series since it's come back in November?
I've been waiting for the trade, and I haven't picked up the newest one.
Oh, okay.
So, I got a holding off judgment, but I anticipate it. And then Invincible is another sort of go-to standard. When they release a trade, I'm right there.
Very cool. Yeah, I'm a bit. Kirkman's great, and you know, I pretty much agree with everybody that you've mentioned so far. So that's very cool. I'm trying to. And I'm blanking because the last time I remember conventions down specifically in Atlanta was that whole flap when Wizard was going to have the Atlanta convention during Heroes Con in North Carolina. Is there an Atlanta Comics Con?
There was like a Atlanta Comics Expo, but I think it may have gone out of business. It was always pretty small.
Okay.
And then there's Dragon Con, which is...
Of course. Yeah, I'm a knucklehead. Of course there's Dragon Con. That's right.
Dragon Con is a surreal experience, man.
I haven't been yet, but all the pros and all the fans that go are like, you would not believe it.
Yeah, it is a bunch of people in costume. 90% of them are just drunk as drunk can be. Like, there's also a factor like where they're all trying to hit on each other, and it is, as far as people watching goes, it does not get much better.
Is do you guys go out there, you know, professionally as the studio and set up, or do panels and everything?
We did a panel one year, but we normally have not. A couple of the guys did Adult Swim panels and doing speaking parts on that, but In the past, we haven't. We may do that for Archer. I don't know.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. And I think I might have even asked you that in our emails back and forth setting this up, if you guys are going to be doing anything for, as the spring cons come up and everything. By the time of Chicago, C2E2, I'm guessing that might be either after the show wrapped up or, yeah, definitely, it would probably be after the show wrapped up.
Yeah, that'll be after. We'll wrap, I think, March, it's either the 12th or the 14th.
Okay, so yeah, it's like a month later.
Yeah.
WonderCon's in San Francisco. I guess MegaCon might be the early. And again, another West Coast con, Emerald City, is, I think, in the first couple weeks of March.
Yeah. I don't know of any plans for us to do that, but I always end up going to HeroesCon just because I grew up, like, about 45 minutes south of Charlotte.
Oh, that's cool.
So, yeah, I'll go home, and then I went to HeroesCon when I was, like, 14, 15 during those years. So, sort of a special place in my heart for it, regardless if I'm there professionally or if I'm just there walking around and meeting people.
Very cool. And what's the response been so far on Archer?
So far, it's been great. It's sort of bigger than what we expected. We did a 1.8 million people watch the premiere.
Fantastic.
From what I'm told, that was the highest rated comedy premiere on FX has had. So that's awesome. That's way better than what we expected. And I think this past episode that aired, there's always a drop after the premiere.
Right.
The drop wasn't that bad. I think it was either 20% or 30%. I don't know.
Okay.
The exact numbers. So we're doing really well. We're in a good spot. You know, doesn't guarantee us a second season or anything, but right now we're doing really well. Very, very happy with it.
Do you, what do you think of, and again, I want to go back to this other platform question. I still think, obviously, that, cable TV is going to be fine as these different changes in media are happening, and that it really, obviously the big four are kind of shaking in their boots because they see their audience kind of dispersing, but yeah. It's going to cable, it's going online. I always wonder about where, the segment format is going to go. In the cases of Adult Swim, they experiment with 15-minute shows as opposed to 30-minute shows. I was initially going to ask, do you want to do an animation movie? But it almost seems like, I've always heard the heavy metal producers say that they almost appreciated working with the different studios they did to make that movie and have each segment have its own unique look, because they say the eye gets tired watching the same, kind of basic format for a long period of time. Do you think that's true? And
to a certain degree, yes. Like, I would definitely do a movie just for the sheer challenge of it.
Sure.
Depending on the time frame. If I was going to do a movie and we had the time to really do it well, I'd be on that in a heartbeat. As far as the eye getting tired, I think there's ways around that. I think there's, as long as you keep your camera moving, I don't think your eye gets any more tired of watching animation or watching an episode of Law and Order. It's all about moving the camera around. Did I answer that question?
Yeah, no, that is kind of what I was getting at in terms of it being too long. What about the shorter content and everything? I mean,
shorter content? I think either shorter content, longer content. I think it all has its place. I think what Adult Swim does is really smart as far as keeping these shows just moving from one to the other, especially some of these shows that are a little more bizarre. If you can get away with a lot if you're working faster, and I think that's why some of the more surreal shows on Adult Swim do really well in that 11-minute time slot. Some of the longer shows, if your audience is going to sit there for half an hour or an hour, they've got to be invested in the show, and they have to have a reason to sort of come back after the commercial break. So I think you have to do a little bit more as far as story to get them into the show, to keep them around for a little while.
Also, and especially since the internet really exploded, it's been fun watching the evolution of Flash animation and comparing it to television's form of limited animation and the little tricks you might learn from anime. Where is the difference between what someone is able to do with Flash animation and say what you guys do with your techniques in terms of doing things visually? Yeah.
We move a lot
quicker doing it this way, or at least I think we do. Flash, you can do a lot as far as what's great about Flash. If I wanted to animate a drop of water coming off a glass or something, like, it's really great for these fluid animations. With After Effects, what we do is we draw all of our characters in Illustrator. They're broken up almost into like a puppet or a G.I. Joe toy, where the hand is on a layer, the forearm is on a layer, the upper arm is on a layer, and we sort of hinge these character files so that we can puppet them around. And, you know, we do some traditional animation because we have to for these sort of complicated moves of a character reaching his hand up and scratching his head or shooting a gun or whatever. But more often than not, it's just one drawing that we've drawn, and then now we're moving the elements around. And through some sort of After Effects trickery, we try and make it look as close to traditional animation as we can. Obviously, it's never going to be 100% looking like traditional animation. It sort of is what it is. But speed is the main thing.
It's certainly
about speed with us.
Well, and you know, I don't know if you're aware of this, and I always bring it up to different creators when I'm talking to them, but the Television Academy has been doing these great oral history interviews with various people, and the one with Joe Barbera was fascinating because because he really, you know, explained the difference between when he was working for MGM and making those full-length Tom and Jerry shorts for them, and then literally creating television's limited animation and what went into, you know, having to be able to do it on a literally like 10% of the budget that he was, that he was working with in movies and that. And not only that, but to even just initially get it sold to early TV, because really it's right there at the golden age of TV.
Wow, I'll have to look that up. That's great.
Yeah, I mean, have you studied traditional animation?
To a certain degree. I never really got I'm not the greatest animator in the world, but I have sort of a basic knowledge of it. I got my degree in 3D animation.
Okay.
So I got my degree in 3D animation, and then I got a job on C-Lab, which was entirely 2D limited animation.
Okay.
I've sort of bounced around a lot. But as far as, like, being a traditional animator, I have some basic skills, but nothing that's that amazing.
Well, I just find the changes and the things that, you know, again, that have come out in the last, you know, 20 years have really been pretty amazing. Where'd you go to school?
I went to the University of Georgia. It was great, and I sort of went there because I didn't know what I wanted to do, and I was going to be either art or politics. and art ended up winning out. So I sort of fell in love with computer animation because it was sort of a blending of telling a story and drawing, which I also was on the sketch comedy show that I really loved, and I loved, like, sort of writing and filming and shooting all this stuff. And the computer animation was sort of the best of all of those worlds.
That's cool.
And animation in general, I guess, was the best of all those worlds.
It was local sketch comedy? Was it something that made it to TV or anything? Or?
Yeah, it was a show called the Silly Spider Monkey Fiasco, which is actually still around. And, it was great. We the first 2 years of it, you know, were probably unwatchable because we didn't know what we were doing. It was a great way to learn how to make television and a great way to learn how not to make television. We made a lot of mistakes, and you sort of find what works and what doesn't work. But as far as a creative outlet, it was fantastic. And it was just every Sunday we would sit around and either write or we would go and shoot. And the sketches and the episodes got better and better, and the writing got better, and we won an award, and then we were shown I think 5 or 6 different campuses across the nation. So it was great, and everyone who worked on that show, we all still keep in touch. We're all still great friends. One of the guys went out and worked on The Real World and Road Rules, and
very cool.
An editor, and a couple of the guys are in New York working with UCB and. Yeah, it was a great experience, and so I learned a lot about making television from them, and then Ed
Mundy, the guy I mentioned earlier, was actually on that show. That's how I know Ed. And Ed got the internship with 7030, and then once he got hired, he recommended me for it. So I sort of, that sketch comedy group is kind of responsible for my career.
Well, and you know, much like comedy clubs and stuff, and you always hear this, you know, you need a place to fail, and you need a place to be able to experiment so that you can move on and learn from those mistakes and really grow your craft. And that's, you know, I think that's what's interesting watching the different iterations of the programs that Adam and Matt have produced and watching their process evolve and all you guys kind of come to new ideas and new process to make them happen.
It's definitely been a learning process. You know, like C-Lab is almost kind of hard for us to watch now just because at the time, you know, I didn't know what I know now.
Sure.
And Frisky Dingo, too, which I love Frisky Dingo. It still has a great place in my heart. But looking back on the first episode, man, it makes me cringe to watch it. Where there's so many mistakes in it. So, yeah, this new show, Archer, is sort of the culmination of a process that's been going on for 10 years now. So, it's exciting. I think it's easily the best work we've done, especially visually. I think this is the best thing that I've done so far today. It's been really great.
Well, I hope you get to continue to do it. And the other great thing is, are they still running reruns of Frisky Dingo on Cartoon Network? I noticed it a lot last week running.
They are. It's one of the reasons why Cartoon Network is so great is the people behind it. They ran a bump advertising Archer, saying if you like Frisky Dingo, you should watch Archer.
That's cool.
That's amazing.
So
utterly nice and unheard of.
I was going to say, when does CBS promote an ABC show? That's fantastic.
Yeah, like it's crazy, and they are just a bunch of really nice people over there, and we're all friends. There's no hard feelings. You know, it's just sort of we're on a different network, but you know, we may end up at doing a show at Cartoon Network after Archer. Who knows?
Sure.
Who knows what the future holds?
That's cool. Well, you know, and that's the other neat thing. Being in radio, one of the reasons why I started doing my podcast was I see the media landscape that's changing literally year to year as more avenues of opportunity rather than fearing, you know, what's going to happen with radio. It's a very exciting time, and that's why when, you know, devices like the tablet and the advances they've made in smartphones and the 3 and 4G networks and made it, you know, I just think really, yeah, that anyone right now that is producing good content should be really excited about how big the playing field is getting and that also that you can kind of control your own destiny more so than having to worry about, God, I mean, if there wasn't that, you know, you guys would be, you know, hoping to get with, like, Kids WB or Fox or what few avenues there were available to animation.
Things are opening up, and it's an exciting time for sure. And the Internet, I don't think anyone's really figured out a way to make a lot of money off of doing a show for the Internet.
But sure.
It's sooner rather than later, I think. I think we're sort of watching it evolve.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's almost like it's the 50s again, you know? I mean, we're like at the golden age of this platform, and we'll see where content goes and where ideas go from here.
Well, it's just like you with this radio show that's not on radio airwaves.
Yeah.
But you get X amount of downloads for it, so it's an exciting time to be in, I think.
I'm with you, man. No, there's a demand for this stuff, and I'm glad you guys have caught a good wave, and I hope you continue to ride it out with Archer and what other future projects you have individually or also with Adam and Matt as well.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I mean, no, the show is great. It's Archer. It's on Thursday nights at 10 Eastern and Pacific, 9 Central on FX, and we've been talking to the art director, Neil Holman, and I appreciate your time and letting us know about the show. And we'll continue to watch, and you can come back and talk more about it maybe when the season wraps up.
I'll talk your ear off. I'd love to, man. I'd love to.
That's Neil Holman, the art director for the FX series Archer. You can catch Archer Thursday nights at 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific, 9 p.m. Central on FX. And as I say, including this Thursday's episode, there are still 7 episodes left in the first season. It's a great show. Check it out. Quick public service message, Somos Art in New York presents Marvelous Color. It's running through the end of February at the Caribbean Cultural Center on 58th Street in New York City. And Marvelous Color celebrates the diversity of heroes in Marvel Comics, and it contains more than 50 original pieces of art, ranging from the 1970s to today. A lot of your favorite creators are represented there. John Romita Jr. and Sr., Rick Buckler, several of today's great artists as well. It's all on display at the Caribbean Cultural Center on West 58th Street in New York City. If you want to learn more, make sure you check out their website, somosart.com. That's SOMOSARTE.com. And that'll do it for this edition of Word Balloon. Thanks again for listening. John Suntrich reminding you to come back to wordballoon.com for, as I said earlier, audio and video interviews with all your favorite creators and some other great video as well. Make sure you check out Chicago's comic scene, some great classic interviews with a lot of our favorite all-time artists and a lot of current people as well. I just put up a great Jason Aaron interview, in fact, that we did talking about the Punisher Max series and other things as well. That's all waiting for you at wordballoon.com. You can also check out our shows at Newsarama and at iTunes. Make sure you subscribe to the Word Balloon feed. Questions or comments about the show, you can reach me via email, john@wordballoon.com. Also follow me on Twitter, John Word Balloon, or on Facebook under my regular name, John Suntrich. Thanks again for listening. Until next time, Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions, copyright 2010.